If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I had a pretty harrowing emergency this morning.
An actual emergency.
Kind of.
An emergency to us can be a lot different from a regular person's emergency.
Well, I was walking my dog, and I was about a mile from where I live, and I was on this hill that I walked the dog past there because there is a really good coffee shop over there that you can either walk on Glendale Boulevard, which is super noisy and cars are going a million miles an hour, and there's just garbage all over the place. It's a very unpleasant street to walk on. Or you can go on this hill. And the hill occasionally has an encampment on it, which mm-hmm. is not great to walk by with the dog because he can kind of, you know, if people have their stuff out, he gets curious about it. And it's just something I like to avoid if I can.
Your dog treats the homeless the same way he treats geese, which is to say,
yeah.
Wants to be friends.
Yeah, yeah. He's very curious about the whole deal. So if there's not an encampment currently there, that's the preferred way to go. And I was coming back from the coffee shop, having gone there on Glendale Boulevard for some reason. So I hadn't been on this little stretch of road yet. And as I was coming around the corner, I could see up the hill from where I was, a woman like jumping up and down, waving her hands. And she wasn't waving them at me, but I was like, oh boy, somebody is having... Someone's having a freak out of some kind.
Uh-huh.
And as I get closer, there is a plastic egg crate on fire in the middle of the street. And what she is doing is jumping up and down, trying to stop cars from driving past it. And then she sees me like walking past it with the dog and starts screaming like crazy at me. And what I come to understand is that she has been like running around the neighborhood following this man who has been setting fires in the middle of the street.
Huh.
Concerned because her daughter lives in the neighborhood and she's worried that it's going to burn somebody's house down. But she was French and didn't speak perfect English. So she's on the phone with 911 trying to describe what's going on.
Wow. How lucky is she to have run into you, the show's chief Frenchman?
Yeah. So she gives me her phone and I tell the dispatcher where this is happening. And and they like, you know, some cops come out with a fire extinguisher.
The egg crate material was too aflame to put out with your feet?
It was melting, but the reason she was worried about me being near it and cars being near it was that she'd looked in it and saw that there were cans in there, and she thought they might be like aerosol or full of gasoline or something.
Wow.
So she was actually like, she looked nuts the entire time I was walking up to her, but once I got to talking to her, I realized she was like, not at all, and was having like a very scary moment that she was responding to pretty rationally.
It's wild how a person's first instinct is that a wild outburst of emotion or volume has got to equal crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like it was place contextual, and you know, she was just in like a jogging outfit, so it was kind of didn't look like anything in particular.
Lululemon doesn't say hobo.
Just from a distance, it was tough to read what the situation was.
Yeah, I'll say. Wow, so yeah. Did you make a new friend?
You know, I left before you know, we talked about anything but the fire, but I hung around for 20 minutes while the cops came, and she and another person that were there gave descriptions of this guy, and they said that they'd already put out two other fires in the neighborhood.
Was the suspect matching the description of Manu Sadia? Wanting to eliminate the other French people from the neighborhood?
There can be only one, he says.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like French Highlander.
Yeah, I mean, she said he had tattoos down both arms, so that's Manu to a T.
Yeah, yeah, a guy for whom soft cheese is too painful. He has gone with the full sleeve arm tattoos as a thing.
Yeah,
is he anti soft or anti hard? I can't remember. All I know is that it's insane to have such a hard line stance on cheese.
He is anti melted cheese.
Mm.
He likes cheese, but
any hard can turn soft with temperature, right?
He said something recently. He thinks he's had one good pizza in his life, and it was in Naples.
That's
and I'm just like, what the hell? Like, I have like legendarily controversial food takes, but this is insane.
That's a real uppity food take. I'm just gonna say it. Like, yeah, yeah. Once I had pizza in Naples, I just stopped having all other pizza. Sorry.
Yeah.
Have you made him your egg pizza? That would change his mind.
I have not made him pizza on the big green egg, but I threatened to when I saw him on Twitter talking smack about all pizza, and he said he was up for the challenge.
Yeah, and that's a good word to use. Like, it's funny how we see both in each other and in other people a challenge when someone has a food opinion we disagree with, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's wrong. Why do we take that upon ourselves?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's like the way like the English language is poorly equipped to distinguish between objective and subjective when it comes to opinions.
That's why you prefer French opinions? The language is a little tighter?
I don't think French is any better. I'm just like, but like when I say I don't like sandwiches. Like people are like, but sandwiches are good. And I'm like, they're not to me.
Yeah. I'm not going to relitigate this with you. Whatever. What I am here to litigate with you, Ben, is this second episode of Deep Space Nine Season 5. I think it's pretty interesting. It's called The Ship.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No. Of course you don't.
This episode opens in the way that all interesting episodes open, a mining survey.
Ben, what's the difference between a captain going on an away mission and a captain going on a mining survey? Why is Sisko here?
Boy, why did they take a runabout given how many people are on this mission?
Like, we never see the back of a runabout. You're totally right about this, but you can infer from their numbers that they had six people in the back, five or six people.
It was a crowded runabout. There's three people I think we see in the cockpit of the runabout, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. We're not including the people who remain.
Yeah.
It's funny when we cut back to Deep Space Nine and the little D doc there, like they're not doing anything. It's just Worf's apartment over there. It's not like they couldn't take it if they wanted to.
Worf would have been more comfortable if they'd taken the little D.
Yeah. I think there are things to like in this episode if you look past the first 5 seconds.
I thought the dynamic between O'Brien and Muñiz was really interesting in this.
Yeah.
In this episode, it's a lot more like jocular, and they like, kind of bust each other's chops and stuff than I was used to.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. Like, you know, Muñiz keeps referring to O'Brien as sir, and he's like,
not an officer.
I don't want to get stuck going to functions because you keep calling me sir and people get the wrong idea.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the kind of ball busting you could only get if the person above you in rank is also not above you in rank. It's weird, yeah. And no one's comfortable with it. And what takes the place of discomfort is some teasing. And that's a way of being that I think you and I know pretty well.
Yeah, I kind of like that Munoz likes to take the piss a little bit.
I have a question.
Yeah.
In a way that is safe to do with his boss.
Yeah, that's good. They're on this planet looking for something we've never heard of before called Cormaline, and they're on a planet called Torga Iv.
Fuck you. God damn it. yeah, they found a whole mess of Tourmaline, though.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that makes Red Bull work, right?
Oh, that's right. It is. Yeah.
The discussion of where the planet is makes it sound like they're pretty far from Dominion space, but they get a call from a chaotic ensign up in orbit. she is not vaping, which is unusual for her species.
Yeah.
What do you suppose that is?
I mean, maybe she kicked the habit. She's the only lady Benzite we've ever seen. So yeah, maybe the ladies don't need it the way that the guys do.
Maybe, yeah. What would be going on with a species where the female of the species breathes a different gas mixture than the male?
Maybe the man in the canoe in her lip makes conventional vaping impossible.
I didn't see that. I frankly didn't even know that it was there.
I was told to look for it, but I don't know. I couldn't find it. She gets on the audio blower to tell Sisko that they've got an incoming.
What kind of ship?
And it is a damaged and crashing Jem'Hadar Tik.
It should enter the atmosphere near your position.
This thing comes down and they beam directly to the crash site. And I feel like it's a pretty impressive scale of outdoor set
right.
for Deep Space Nine. But this doesn't, it's not the right colors. Like, it doesn't look like a Tik.
Yeah, I got that same feeling. I think it's obscure. Like, the shape of the Tik is obscured because it's buried under all this rock. And
right.
that doesn't help. I think so much of our contextual understanding of these things has to do with their shape versus their color.
Yeah.
But it appears like for having just crashed that it had baked under this desert sun and a lot of the color has been sort of bleached out of it.
I just think it's an unfortunate artistic choice because everything outside is like sun-bleached California dirt,
yeah.
which is the color of every exterior that Star Trek ever did before Star Trek Discovery.
Right.
And just putting a paint, like a coat of purplish-blue paint on it to make it match the ticks that we see in space would have made it pop so nicely. And this hull is the exact same color as the dirt.
They shot the episode in Soledad Canyon, and it was 120 degrees when they did.
Fuck.
Like, they're standing on the USS patio quite a bit during the episode, and it feels like if they had taken your advice and gone with a different color, they would have gotten less reflected heat off of the surface of this thing, because it's just steel plates, Ben.
Go for a lower albedo paint job.
Yeah.
Your actors are going to be much more comfortable.
Or you know what? Set up a couple of bistro tables and some umbrellas out there.
Yeah, get some of those plastic lawn chairs.
That sounds nice, right?
They break into this thing, and it's some pretty fun, like, horror film going into the scary house stuff.
I
looked up the director of this episode. Her name is Kim Friedman, and she directed a ton of TV. She directed, like, Voyager, 90210... Babylon 5. She's got a super deep television directing resume, and then has recently had a second life as an internet meme.
What?
She had, like, her daughter made an Instagram account called Crazy Jewish Mother of shit that Kim Friedman texts her, and it went viral. They've been on, like, the Today Show with this, you know, it's like shit my dad says kind of a premise.
Wow.
And they have a podcast. It's like an advice podcast and they have like a burgeoning internet empire.
Try to imagine hosting a podcast with your mother, Ben.
I can't either. I'm just like amazed that like, I don't know, like it's such a cool thing that she had like this super prestigious television directing career. Like she,
well,
like,
I wouldn't go that far. Babylon 5 is probably not something she keeps on her resume.
Maybe a one or two blemishes, but yeah. Went on to like, you know, it seems like she maybe retired from directing in 2014, but still doing active, cool cultural stuff.
You're telling me that Kim Friedman at one point had a successful film and television career and traded it in for a podcast. That is great.
That old chestnut.
We've heard it a million times. You're right about the haunted house of the interior of the USS patio, because it has crashed inverted.
Yeah.
And that does some pretty fun things. Like one horror movie trope I feel like you get is the strung up person, the strung up dead body.
Yeah.
And in this orientation, all of the deads aboard are going to be hanging from the ceiling, which makes for a fun, like, back into a room, turn forward into a hanging body situation.
Yeah. And the sets are really fun because the floors are on the ceiling and like what they're walking on is all like pipes and lighting and stuff.
We've never been aboard a Tick before, and this is something that I think Dax and Sisko discuss earlier. So the value of the exploration is fairly pronounced, but because we haven't seen the inside of a Tick and this is our first go at it, I don't know that we're going to remember what the inside looks like the next time we see one.
Yeah.
Just because we're experiencing it this way.
Yeah, but that's a fun way to, you know, a very like Alice in Wonderland way of introducing it.
Right. All the bodies they come across are basically sacks of busted up bones and guts, because the thing that took this thing down was an inertial dampener failure, and that is the thing that steadies you against the movement of the ship. And when this ship took off for the atmosphere, it totally pulverized everyone on board.
The ship accelerated. People were thrown into the bulkheads.
I was really laughing at this because the Chief is like describing this totally terrifying thing that happened to kill everyone on board, and then it's like, but the ship's in great shape.
Whoever designed this baby knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Like, in the same breath as describing a system failure that killed all of the occupants.
It's like finding the propeller of the Titanic at the bottom of the sea and going like, man, can't believe they ever built him this good.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
Come on, Chief.
If you're going to string up a body with every bone in its body pulverized, I would have expected more of a teardrop water balloon kind of corpse. Part of it is because there seems to be like some internal and external bones on the Jem'Hadar, right? They're kind of insecty that way, right?
I guess so.
I don't know.
No, I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, I think that the thing that is described is not what is shown, and it should have just been grape jelly all over the inside of this ship, not identifiable corpses.
O'Brien just slides into that bridge.
Come on in, Moonies. The water's fine.
Back on Deep Space Nine, we must be reminded that there are a few people left behind over there. Those come in the form of Odo, Quark, and Bashir. And it's Odo accusing Quark and Bashir of conspiring to trade in some Regalian flea spiders.
A superior form of life.
Bashir is doing the sort of experiment where he gets a bunch of insects and then pulverizes them in a mortar and pestle and then administers them to Kira so she can stop sneezing or something.
Yeah, and what it is that he asked Quark if he could get his hands on some of these. Quark snuck them in, despite the fact that there is a requirement that a permit is pulled for these things.
I mean, it's not so much the flea spiders as it is the crystals that Quark tried to sneak into this shipment. It's the crystals that are the problem.
Right. They're described as aphrodisiacs, though. It doesn't seem like something that makes you want to fuck should be forbidden by Bajoran law.
And for that reason, I would assume that Bashir would be involved in such a scheme.
Yeah.
What do you imagine the Regalian flea spider's urine tastes like?
Gross.
Back on Torga Iv, they're discussing the USS Patio, and there's a really nice establishing shot here, Ben. It looks like they set up some track outside on this sand, and then they stuck a jib on top, and then they drove around this curve.
Yeah.
And they descend onto
O'Brien, Munoz, and Sisko. This is where they're like, they have a panel open and they're like working on the ship.
Really nice move here.
Yeah.
It's nice to get outside where there's room for this.
It's at this point in filmmaking, kind of a motion picture level establishing shot, you know, like it's one of those, this really gives you a certain amount of production value, you know, bespeaks a certain amount of money was spent on this production. It's a cheap shot to do now with the advent of the drone camera. Mm-hmm. But at this point in time, this is like a, you know, 5 or 6 person operation to make a camera do this.
Yeah, you think about what it takes to do on an uneven surface and 120 degree temperature. Track is difficult to level in situations like this. So you're like dropping apple boxes and shims onto it to make sure it's level. And then you're driving the dolly over and making sure it doesn't sink.
Right.
And then you're bolstering certain areas when they do sink. It's like super time consuming to get the initial setup. And so
like several people might spend all day to get this one shot kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you talk about television scheduling and how fast they need to shoot a lot of this stuff, the investment in time to set up just this single shot this way, I thought really stuck out to me, and it sounds like it did to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Golden cut. Golden cut. So they are trying to kind of get this thing back up and running. They're eager to take this thing back to Starfleet to see what makes it tick.
Oh, delightful.
the runabout that they stupidly brought is not going to be able to pull it out with its dinky little tractor beam. So they are either going to have to like fire the thrusters and get the ship back out from under the mountain, or bring the little D. So the little D is on its way, but they're working on getting power back online in the meantime. And there's a fun little moment where they're kind of out on the underbelly of this tick, and O'Brien turns to Munoz and he's like, "Do you know what they call an Irishman who spends all summer outdoors? Patio furniture."
Oh man, you really brought your A game today, Ben.
That's my friend Tony Borden made that joke up. It's one of my favorite jokes.
Very nice. Tony O'Borden. Otherwise, that's racist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can say it because I'm part Irish.
Right. Some of your best friends are Irish, Ben. There is not a lot of discussion before the Jem'Hadar appear and start shooting after destroying the runabout in orbit, too. Like, it's sort of a coordinated attack. The runabout is destroyed, and then they're surrounded, and so they retreat to the interior of the ship. In the process, like, one of the randoms down there gets killed, and Munoz is shot in the belly. Which is the worst place to get shot by a phaser, right?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's seen the George Clooney film Three Kings knows that you're just going to fill up with green stuff if you get shot down there.
Yeah, O'Brien's got to stick a ballpoint pen in that wound. O'Brien should use bagpipes to refill his lungs.
I mean, the Irish have their own type of bagpipes, so I feel like that's much more associated with the Scottish.
All right. All right, that's right. Yeah, that'll go really well on social media, comment I made.
If groundskeeper Willie were there, you might have something to talk about, Adam.
Yeah, but as it is, I don't, because everyone looks the same to me.
I was a little disappointed in the Starfleets that their phaser accuracy was as bad as it was. Didn't look like they tagged a single Jem'Hadar in their way under.
For as great of a shot as most Jem'Hadar are supposed to be. I was also a little surprised at how often they shot wide.
I mean, they land some hits, but, you know, yeah. I think this script is just a little sloppy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, have them hit two of the Jem'Hadar and get down there and be like, but we were on stun, so they'll be back on their feet in no time, you know?
Yeah.
Just put that in so that they don't look like total bozos.
Yeah, this is your second point here. You got to get past this point to like the episode.
Yeah, and the Jem'Hadar do not beam through the hull of this ship, and it is driving them nuts why that might be.
They retreat into the ship, and it's 2.5 days until the Defiant arrives, so
yeah.
They're not experiencing much of the outside world, and that's where a lot of the fear comes from.
Right.
And what they're hearing from the inside, and the first thing that they hear is Kelana's voice.
My name is Kelana.
And she's the Vorta in charge of the groups outside.
She's kind of talking about, like, battlefield parlay, where she and one Jem'Hadar come, and Sisko and one Worf come, and they talk the situation out. So they meet outside, and the Vorta all are very consistently slick in a very particular way.
She seemed California nice to me in a way that read suspicious from jump.
Yeah.
Sisko doesn't act the way I would, which is like, why are you talking to me? Why are you being so nice?
Yeah. Sisko is saying like, hey, like there's a pretty well-established tradition of naval salvage here.
Well, that's the attitude of a thief, not a Starfleet captain with a reputation for integrity.
The Dominion doesn't subscribe to that particular legal interpretation. At no point does he say, well, I'm not like inclined to make deals with you. You just killed 4 or 5 of my people and shot my ship out of the sky.
I love how he never brings that up. That's great.
Like, come on, Sisko. Like, that should be in the script, right?
Yeah, it really should. Especially because we haven't forgotten. It just happened.
Yeah, it is top of mind.
There may have been a commercial break between then and now, but that's not too long. We're not goldfish watching this show.
No.
You remember.
While they're having this conversation, we check out Worf standing up on top of the ship, and the camera pans over to the open door, and then inside the ship, a Jem'Hadar materializes and cloaks himself and starts running around.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that is a fade-to-commercial moment.
Jem'Hadar to commercial. This guy appears to have planted something aboard the USS Patio, because as O'Brien and Dax are walking around the ship on what I guess is just a routine patrol, they find this thing and question where it came from.
Whatever it is, it doesn't look too friendly.
No sooner as they see the thing as this guy appears and starts clobbering them.
Yeah. And they manage to distract this guy long enough for Munoz to shoot him. But this crab that he snuck aboard with has scanned the ship and presumably sent critical information back to the Jem'Hadar. And Munoz is really in a rough way. Like, whatever the Jem'Hadar shoot, it is not a normal phaser. It's like, his wound won't close up, so he just like kind of has like a bleeding belly wound this entire time.
Yeah, if the Jem'Hadar are shooting a projectile with a casing, I feel like the casing is like 500 milligrams of Bayer aspirin. Which, depending on your age and taken daily, might be something a doctor would prescribe. In Munoz's case, it is not allowing his blood to coagulate, and that's a big problem.
He is in a tough way, and like the medical kit that they would have had was with somebody else, or it's at their base camp where they beamed over from or something. So they don't really have any actual medical technology to bring to bear on this problem. So the chief is just kind of like playing strip nurse with it. Like, he keeps pulling pieces of his uniform off and trying to sop up the blood. He's yeah. really getting bummed out by what's happening to Kike, as he refers to Munoz. And at one point, Dax like pulls him aside, and she's kind of trying to cheer him up. And Worf is like, don't try and cheer him up. Munoz is definitely going to die.
Yeah, they've got way different ways of, quote-unquote, being there for O'Brien.
Yeah, and Worf does not respect Dax's way at all.
Worf and O'Brien have been through the deaths of crew people before. It's weird that Worf is being such a hardliner in this case. I get the sense that he didn't like Munoz.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Worf is interested in Munoz's situation at all. Like,
no.
I think it's like once he's injured enough to be not a tactical asset, Worf is just like, he's dead, don't care about him.
Munoz left dirty dishes in the Defiant Commissary. He is without honor.
Munoz left his towels on the floor of his bathroom.
A hanging towel is a happy towel.
He did not make a green choice.
Munoz is not doing so hot, but he's sort of buoyant in the face of death. Like, he's still quippy and chopping it up with O'Brien.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope when our time comes, Ben, and it'll probably be together, that both of us can have that kind of attitude.
just holding hands as the friends of DeSoto that we've outraged for some reason storm the stage.
You're tearing pieces of obviously like something made out of linen that you're wearing, mm-hmm. and stuffing it into my wounds.
I love cloth made of flax, Adam.
Yeah, and me wearing some sort of bullshit technical garment. Unable to rip the sleeves from it because the stitching is too strong.
I've never seen you in a technical garment.
Yeah, that's not me. I'm trying to be more natural, Ben. I think you're a big inspiration for me in that regard.
Aw. I think you've got a great sense of style.
Oh man, you needed a lot of time to get that out. I'm proud of you.
I was just gonna go back to the plot, but I realized that I didn't want to leave that hanging.
It's fine. All right, you don't have to feel obligated.
It wasn't disingenuous, Adam. I was being serious.
I don't believe you.
I don't know what I could say to make you believe me. That was a sincere remark on my part.
This whole incident is kind of a mystery because when Sisko takes stock of it, he's like, what the fuck was that sensor? Why wouldn't they just drop a bomb on us? And also, why send one Jem'Hadar and not all of them in? And also, what's the deal with Kalana? Why is she being so nice?
Yeah, the puzzle here seemed really obvious to me at this point.
Oh, yeah?
I they make the case that this is going to be like a big twist when it is revealed why the Jem'Hadar are being so weird. And I just thought like everything pointed to one thing.
As soon as Kalana said, you can have the ship, we don't give a shit about it, but there's something on board that we need. Like, there is nothing else that it could have been besides a founder.
Right.
The only question, I guess, is like,
well, you
why
gave it away. Spoiler alert. Adam just said what the thing was. I didn't.
Why would a founder conceal themselves in the ship, though? Like, there's so many threads that go untied.
Yeah, well, they're worried that Bashir might be with them and he might try and drink it.
Yeah.
Interesting that he is not there to minister to Munoz in any way.
No.
I think the script is it feels a little rushed and bad, but I think that's one thing in it that is an interesting choice.
Yeah.
Kalana calls back up and she is just falling all over herself to apologize for the way they acted.
I trust no one was hurt.
And Sisko, again, is so neutral here. He should be flying off the handle with her.
We've got a lot at stake, too.
It's clear that Kalana's side has all the leverage, but, I mean, as long as Sisko and crew are turtling inside this ship and there's something of value inside, it would appear that they are at Jem Halagerhead's, Ben, in terms of their argument.
What is that even a pun of?
When you can't agree on the terms of a thing, you're at loggerheads.
Yeah, no, but it's like a totally arbitrary portmanteau.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can do wordplay too, Ben.
Okay, apparently. Unmotivated.
It's not unmotivated. They're trying to agree on terms of ship versus thing that Kalana wants inside. They can't come to an agreement, so they walk away from the negotiating
table. But you could just as easily
they're
say they're
at Jem Halagerheads, Ben.
They're at Vortagerheads or Federagerheads.
I think mine is the best of those three.
I just think that it's unfair that you've put all of the loggerheads on one ethnic group, you know?
Yeah.
Plays into an ugly stereotype.
This is a bad race show for Adam.
That the Jem'Hadar are not diplomatic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's at this point in time that Sisko retreats to the inside of the ship, and that's where these depth charges begin.
Yeah, I really like the way she's like announcing that they are not going to continue to try and use diplomacy as she is beaming away.
Yeah.
There's the Vorta seem to be able to like think their way into a transporter beam, and that's pretty terrifying that they could just transport whenever they want.
Yeah. They're better at two things than the Federation. There's the ungestured transporter beam, and there's also the they don't need to look to the sky when they talk to people on comms. Pretty classy.
At this point, you know, there are bangers getting dropped all around outside. I liked that they left those explosions kind of unexplained for a little while. Like, you start to hear them when Sisko runs back to the ship, and then that you're hearing them for a while before they it's explained that the Jem'Hadar are just kind of dropping explosives from space to as a psychological ploy. Like, they're trying to get under their skin, and it's really working. Like, Dax really starts to fly off the handle, Worf starts to fly off the handle. Like, Sisko needs to scream at everybody to calm down, and Kike is starting to like disassociate in time and space. He's like reverts to only speaking Spanish and doesn't seem to know where he is or what's going on.
Yeah, he's tripping balls.
Yeah. Very scary and good performance.
I feel like this scene is the center of the episode that you start writing in opposite directions from. Like, what happens when you stick the Deep Space Nine crew in a situation that they can't control? For like, what would happen if you stress out our main characters? And I'm very interested in a story about that.
Yeah.
But
The movie would start with this scene and be like, bet you wonder how things got this bad.
The anger and frustration that these characters had in this scene felt supernatural to me, to the degree where I was like, oh, is the ship... If the ship is full of Jem'Hadar and the Jem'Hadar are ready to kick ass, like, is there something about being on the ship that gives you that endorphin? I wasn't believing that it was the stress that was causing their argumentativeness. I thought it was something else.
Like, there's something in the air.
Yeah, that's what I imagined. And, I mean, we know now that that wasn't true, but why is that, you think? Did it just come too much out of nowhere? I don't know. I felt like it could have maybe been fixed with dialogue, or maybe could have grown in a more gradual way, because I feel like things really get heated fast.
I think the script is saying what it wants, but it didn't quite earn it.
Yeah.
I don't think anything is wrong with anybody's performance. I don't think that's unjustified. It's just that they're like, we're missing like a scene or two or some explanatory dialogue.
Instead of a scene like that, Ben, we get two dead ends, which is Dax searching the ship and finding two computer disks that are not discussed ever again.
Yeah.
They don't appear to have anything useful on them. And then Worf ripping a computer off the wall and them not doing anything with that.
They're convinced that they'll be able to find whatever the Vorta and the Jem'Hadar wanted on the ship. Yeah. And, you know, like, if they can find it, it's their leverage.
Yeah.
And so to that end, it's smart for them to be looking for it, but they just don't have any idea what they are even looking for.
Worf unsolicitedly counsels O'Brien about his beliefs, W/R/T, end of life issues.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
And the discussion does not go well, Chief O'Brien, because he like throws a punch at him.
I said, that's enough!
Did not expect that.
Yeah. They're like litigating Terry Schiavo a few years before it actually happened in reality.
Yeah, Worf is trying to justify mercy-killing Yunus. And O'Brien is not there for that.
Let him go to Stovokor with some of his dignity.
Yeah.
Not going to Stovokor, Worf.
Worf has gotten a lot worse, right? This isn't just something we're imagining. Like, it seemed like on the Enterprise, he was not this forceful at projecting his worldview onto other people unsolicited. And he is really throwing it around this season.
Maybe just being, having spent so much time in such a Klingon environment in the last episode has reset his manners.
Right. They're kind of stuck here with no other choice but to try to take the Tick off of the planet's surface. And they have no burned matchstick to help them do it. They attempted to connect a bunch of wires on this thing, hot wire it and get it going. This is a ship they don't understand at all. Like,
right.
Entire systems are totally mysterious to them. But in the face of all of that, they attempt a takeoff and shit just goes wild almost as soon as they do.
Pretty brave of them to do it, but they're pushing it and sparks are flying all over the place, and eventually the lights go out and O'Brien announces,
"You're just grinding metal! Come on, he's down!"
And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where the ship is now in worse shape than before they tried.
Yeah. It's like getting a flat tire and then trying to drive on the rim for a while. That's just not good. You got to pull over.
And if that wasn't enough of a bummer, the chief walks over to check on Munoz, and he has passed away.
RSVP Munoz.
Yeah. Interesting that they established that character as long ago as they did and brought him back a bunch of times for a bunch of really different reasons.
Yeah.
It feels like a bigger, heavier deal when it happens than it would have if he was just a guy that they introduced in this episode. And I think it goes a long way toward justifying the next scene, which is Sisko really having a bum out about having lost as many crewmen on this mission as possible. And he's like, you know, the only way I'll feel like this was worth it is if we can get out of here with this ship.
Were you as bummed as Sisko in this scene?
I think he was more bummed, but I think that is because, like, we kind of didn't know any of the people in the runabout, but he did. So, like, I'm really bummed and sad about Munoz, and then you multiply that by four, and you can kind of get to where he is, I think.
Ben, I feel like if we were to run the montage of Munoz's life on Deep Space Nine as we knew it, it's Munoz coming up with that deflector dish idea on the little D.
Mm-hmm.
It's Munoz making fun of O'Brien a couple of times.
Yeah, wasn't he there when O'Brien like came back from prison and he was helping him get back into being the chief?
Yeah, I think we get three character development moments with him, and I think that is insufficient to properly grieve him. Like, I think the thing that would have really made me sad about his death is like one moment where Munoz and the O'Briens go out to dinner and like maybe Munoz's partner is there with him. Like,
right.
Like something that made him something other than a coworker, I guess. Because I don't know, it just feels like a little bit empty. I would have wanted to feel more. I'm not saying that Munoz was a shit character. I'm just saying like if you're gonna kill someone and make a big deal about it, like really work the emotional angle.
Yeah. I kind of feel like they realized they had a more interesting character to kill off than a red shirt would have been. And that's why he's like, I don't think that they planted him 10 episodes ago with the idea of getting to this point so that he could die.
Yeah.
You know? So that's, I think I disagree a little bit, but I know what you're saying.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
Evening, everybody.
Time.
Yeah, so there's five dead already on this mission, and with the bodies stacking up, Sisko's really starting to feel it.
While they're having this conversation, Dax is, you know, kind of trying to comfort him and express how much this wasn't his fault. They're looking at the ceiling or their floor. Some little droplets are accumulating on it, and because they look up and a bulkhead kind of goes gold and falls on the floor, and it's kind of this writhing mass of of Founder Gold, and then it turns into the carbon dust that we saw the last time we saw Founder die.
It's dying.
Then we're in trouble.
It explains why the Jem'Hadar didn't directly attack the ship. Here's our answer.
I think it is such a shame that this show had as exciting a special effect as they had when they had Mirror Universe Odo by the farm,
mm-hmm.
and they left that visual behind.
That would have been great, like the explosion in close quarters.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Sisko and Dax are like covered with the stuff.
Yeah, they pop up out of the ship like a couple of chimney sweeps.
Yeah. That would have been great.
Yeah, that's big fun.
So that was the object.
As a result, it's RSVP Changeling, RSVP all of the Jem'Hadar soldiers who have shot themselves in the head after realizing the death of the Changeling has taken place.
Yeah.
Because from the outside, you can hear it. You can hear the death.
It's
weird.
It's, yeah. Wouldn't it be deafening inside the ship if it's making it all the way through the mountain into the quarry outside?
Yeah, it would be. It would be great if it were like the dumb and dumber, most annoying sound in the world sound whenever a changeling dies.
It would be great if they get back to the station and every time they talk to somebody in between now and then, they're like, what? Huh? What?
You see that shit coming out of their ears? They can't fucking hear.
Yeah, and then Bashir has to repair their ear canals or whatever.
Sisko's like, he was making a move, man.
I had to get it on.
Yeah. Kalana and Sisko argue about whose fault this was, and this is maybe as heated as Sisko gets.
Yeah, she shows up like immediately.
Sisko is sort of a little bit broken about all this needless death over this thing. And Kalana asks for permission to load up some of this Founder's coffee grounds into her AeroPress for the trip home. And so she does. She takes a little scoop, and that leaves the ship to Sisko's care.
Yeah.
We get a brief exterior shot of the Tick getting towed back by the Little D. And then once we're inside Deep Space Nine, we get a little more of the Dax and Sisko discussing the mission. They get medals, which is cool, but Sisko is still pretty broken up about this. He's got these 5 names to write a report about, and he just can't bring himself to do it.
Yeah,
what Sisko needs right now is a needs of the many speech from someone, and Dax seems incapable of giving it.
We both know that ship out there was worth it.
At what cost is a tough question. Mm-hmm. In a thing like this, which very briefly makes the case that this may save thousands of lives, but I think that it's such an abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to 5,000 lives,
yeah,
that it doesn't feel like anything.
Unclear whether or not her words help in this situation. But Sisko isn't the only one grieving. There's also O'Brien, who is sat next to the Mark IV torpedo casing containing Munoz's body. It's nice to see that the funeral sciences have maintained all the technologies from early Star Trek movies, right? Like, into the casing you go.
Right.
That's fun.
Yeah. O'Brien is saying goodbye to Mark IV, and Worf kind of like walks in on him, and it's one of those like, oh, I didn't realize you were in here. But he realizes that O'Brien is sort of like sitting Shiva, and he's like, oh, I'll sit Shiva with you. And he throws a cloth over the nearby mirror, and they have a little mourning hang.
Worf again is projecting his beliefs onto others when he tells O'Brien what he's doing.
You're performing Appo for your friend.
Jesus, Worf, like, ask a question and then listen to the answer. He's a bad listener.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we've ever seen his ears, so
yeah,
maybe he can't hear.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, so they both sit down together, and that's the end of the episode.
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it, do it!
Did you like the episode, Ben?
Overall, I did. You know, like, there are a few things that you do have to look past to accept this episode, and I think it's one of those great premise, terrible title, terrible script.
Yeah.
Episodes. But, you know, it's really fun to spend some time kind of expanding our understanding of Jem'Hadar life, like the weird Google Glass that they find in the mm-hmm. ship. They're like, they don't have a view screen, they just have this. And
yeah.
Kind of, adding some texture to our understanding of the Dominion is a lot of fun.
Yeah, the idea of a windowless ship as being what the Tick is super interesting, and it makes total sense.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
I am in total lockstep with you on this. Like, it was more fun of an episode to talk about than I think it actually was.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of real roadblocks here in the story that you've just really got to somehow surmount in order to love it completely. Glad to know a little bit more. Glad to know another Vorta. I mean, yeah. Every time we have an interaction with the Jem'Hadar, again, it's like they are playing for much higher stakes than anyone else. Like, as soon as that founder died and then all the Jem'Hadar killed themselves, I was like, yeah, that is totally what they do. Because
like,
it is.
What is it going to take for the Federation to declare war against them? Because, like, at this point, they're just indiscriminately shooting
yeah.
Federation ships out of the sky. Like,
yeah.
That's not something that they should stand for.
All their weapons are torture weapons.
Yeah.
Munoz was shot with a weapon that is meant to make it so that everyone around a wounded soldier will be occupied with their care. It's an especially gruesome kind of idea. Time and time again, we're like proven how awful and dangerous the Jem'Hadar are, and Sisko continues to treat the situation diplomatically.
And assume that they're going to come in as good faith as he's coming in.
And Kalana proves him wrong every single time.
Sisko feels like as much of the guilt at the end, like if we'd only trusted each other, we could have avoided all this. And the burden of extending an olive branch is not on you, Sisko.
Yeah.
Like, trusting them is how you get into fucking Eddington-type situations.
It appears like he's being Eddingtoned constantly now, and I don't know how he's going to pull out of this. He needs to tighten it up.
Got to get your shit together, Sisko.
He's wandering onto a used car lot, and he's being sold lemons every episode. Well, one thing that drives great every time is a priority one message, Ben.
Oh, what's it going to take for me to put you in a priority one message today, Adam?
Nothing at all. Nothing but a high interest car loan, Ben. That's what Sisko would accept.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. The first one is from Hardcore Fenton Mike and Denise Cosby, Blinded by Your Vape Fog. It's for Mordok Pineapple Upside Down Scented Haru, Belated Birthday Boy. Haru? I don't know how to pronounce that. H-E-R-O-U-X.
Haru?
I don't know. Anyways, it goes like this. Now, when you're old like Mordok, vaping 24/7, 365, you're going to want to construct a Benzite-style vaping apparatus. Your preferred vape pen, metal clamps, and screws from your local hardware store, and a Neil Young-style harmonica holder are required for a hands-free, OSHA-approved vaping.
Your constant vaping is a war crime! Fuck you, birthday boy!
Nice pivot between characters.
Yeah. It was very helpful that they wrote the P1 in dialect.
Yeah, it's kind of phonetic that way.
Yeah, yeah. Like Mark Twain wrote it. if Mark Twain wrote things as dumb as the Greatest Generation.
Almost all of our great impressions were included in this P1.
Yeah.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Arden. And in parentheses, it says it's like garden without the G. And it's for Jim. Message goes like this. Happy Father's Day. The date of this submission was April 25th. So that is Unfortunate.
Yeah. Nowhere near dads or grads at this point.
If I sent my dad a Father's Day card right now, I would be unsunned. Message continues, you and Justin are amazing dads, and I'm so happy that you have another child to celebrate this year. I'm writing this on the day of Robin's birth and hoping that by Father's Day you will be settling in as a family of five. May your kids grow up to be silly nerds who aren't even a little embarrassed to enjoy Star Trek with you. Love you all.
Cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Happy Father's Day, Jim. Sorry it is so tardy.
Yeah. Jim, by this point in time, months and months after April 25th, will have taken out tons of dirty diapers.
Yeah. Jim is just wondering, like, does Arden even give a shit about the fact that I am a father?
Jim, I promise, Arden cares. Arden really cares. Just like we care about reading Priority One messages. If you've got one of your own, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbrotron. Jumbotron is our bro-to-bro communication system that we have not used yet on Greatest Gen, but MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron is the one we use most often, and whether that's a commercial message or a personal message, both go a long way in supporting the ongoing production of the show.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give mine to O'Brien, but not for the reasons you might think. Like, punching Worf is pretty crazy, but I'm not going to give it to him for that.
Yeah, your fists are writing checks your ass can't cash in a moment like that, O'Brien.
I would like to maybe at another time interrogate whether or not O'Brien is a good fighter. I would like to know the answer to that question. I don't think we have enough data for that. But O'Brien's the first through the hole, I think, on the USS Patio. And upon exploring the ship, he walks past several broken and opened dryer hose vents, venting a mystery gas. And he does not even try to avoid or like put his face in the crook of his elbow or anything. And I think you've got to do that, right? Like, it's okay to cover your face when you walk past the busted gas vent.
When it comes to the Dominion, that could really be anything.
They have said that this is the first time boarding one of these ships.
It could be a vaporized, you know, like a founder in vapor form.
If you inhale a founder and then they take form inside your lungs, you die, right? They just explode you from the inside like a chest burster.
You'd look like Odo when he got shot in the mirror universe.
That would be really rugged. I would like to see that death. What about you, Ben? Who's your drunk Shimoda?
I'm going to give it to Sisko, because when Kalana calls up the first time, she's like, hey, just hit the green triangle on any panel, and you can talk to me. And without any hesitation or concern that hitting the green triangle might initiate self-destruct or something, Sisko just complies. And, man, you got to keep your head on a swivel around these founders, man.
Yeah.
Like, would you put it past the Jem'Hadar to have a button available all throughout a ship that just self-destructs?
Or, like, upon hitting it, you die. It's just a suicide button.
I feel like that's that is totally in keeping with the way the Jem'Hadar roll.
If a first Jem'Hadar has to discipline someone under him, it may be easier in some cases to just go, to Carl, hit the green button for being late to this meeting.
Hey, Carl, why don't you go hit the green button? It's like an insult among them.
Yeah. Too much trust is the problem in this episode. Like, if we could distill it down to one thing.
Too much and not enough.
Yeah.
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that
gold press latch.
Am I right?
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Well, I trust you're going to tell me the episode we're going to watch next. What's it going to be about?
The next episode is season 5, episode 3, Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places. Boy, they really turned it around on the titles being bad, didn't they?
Where did that come from?
Worf helps Quark woo a visiting Klingon woman, despite the fact that he himself is in love with her.
Wow.
Kind of a Cyrano de Bergerac Klingon edition.
You are a lady with some very interesting needs if you could be attracted to both a Worf and a Quark.
Yeah, very very open-minded.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
All about it.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, I suppose I should head over to gach.biz/games so we can find out how we are going to be watching this next episode.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
How's it going to be when it goes down?
Well, we are currently on square 43. Looks like we could hit a Coco No-No and we could hit a Space Butthole.
All right.
Depending. Okay, I'm gonna hit the roll button. Roll this bone. Oh man, so I rolled a 2.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Landed on square 45. Regular old episode.
All right.
The Coco No-No and the Space Butthole remain hazards.
Tantalizingly close to the Coco No-No.
Well, that will be the next episode, Adam. I'm really looking forward to it. In the meantime, I hope the friends of DeSoto who like the show and want to see it continue head over to MaximumFun.org/donate and contribute to its production. Also, check out our other Star Trek show, The Greatest Discovery. We've been having a lot of fun over there, and also covering all the news about all these new Trek properties that are coming out. It is really nutso how when we started The Greatest Generation, we were like dealing with basically a dead franchise, and now there's a zillion new television properties in production.
Yeah. Are you regretting what we've changed ourselves to?
No, man.
Okay.
I feel like we got in on the ground floor of something really cool that's happening.
Yeah, we had some great timing, didn't we? Jeez.
Yeah. It's maybe the first time in my life I've had good timing for anything.
Pretty great problem to have. Yeah, we've also got Friendly Fire, the hit war movie podcast that Ben and I do with John Roderick. It's great.
We should thank Adam Ragusea, who makes all the original music for the show, and Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song, upon which our music is based. We should thank J.J. Lendl and Bill Tilly, who make movie posters and trading cards of each episode, and post those on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. If you'd like to talk about the show on social media, use the hashtag GreatestGen. There's Facebook groups and Reddit sub, Discord things,
SoundCloud.
Lots of great people on Twitter. Friends of DeSoto are all over the damn place.
It's true. You can try to get rid of us, and then another one pops up in their place. Well, with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, where Ben and I fight over the same girl, while all the time not realizing that there's been a girl that's liked us the whole time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Nuts.
You know, you focus on the girl in front of you, Ben, and you've missed the girl attacking from the side.
Clever girl. So just to recap, if you need to send a commercial message or a personal message, anything like that, MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. And if you need to reach Josh, it's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
We should get that set up. Hey, Danny. Little favor. Can you do maybe 2 hours of work for a joke no one cares about?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.